Thank you, Your Honor, and I appreciate the courtesy relative to the pandemic. My name is John Seidlitz. I am honored to be before the court representing my client, Dionne Nadon. Ms. Nadon applied for Social Security disability benefits and was denied those benefits, and this appeal has followed. I would request 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. I am keeping track of my own time, so I will try to end there. Ms. Nadon had applied for benefits back in April of 2015. She went through the normal process, ultimately having an administrative hearing. After the administrative hearing, the ALJ found the only severe impairment Ms. Nadon suffered was degenerative disc disease of the spine. As the court is well aware, the steps in terms of the disability evaluation, there's a five-step procedure. The first is whether there's SGA activity. The second, is there any severe impairments? Here, not listed as severe were any of Ms. Nadon's mental limitations, PTSD, major depression, anxiety. None of those were incorporated. They were not reviewed in step three, the listed impairments, and they were not submitted to the vocational consultant as part of the residual functional capacity under step four. This is a critical error. I believe it is a fatal error to the ALJ's decision, because the evidence in front of the ALJ and this court from the healthcare providers clearly establishes the severity of her mental limitations, including those alone, in addition to her physical impairment.
Is the healthcare provider that you're relying on for the mental impairments primarily Dr. Newman?
It is Dr. Newman, in addition to the counselor, Kimbrell. Danielle Kimbrell provided counseling, and both found almost identical medical findings, mental findings, as well as almost identical severities in terms of the level of anxiety.
I'll ask the government about this as well, but there seemed to be confusion in this case about Dr. Newman, because it seems that the government thinks he didn't start treating your client until, I think, July 2016, but actually there are notes from May 2016 at ER 579, and I don't really understand why those notes weren't discussed. Do you have an understanding of that?
But in terms of my brief at pages 16 and 17, 18, brief at 18, we discussed Dr. Newman from the May 23rd, 2016 initial examination. The psychiatrist diagnosed PTSD, major depression, including fibromyalgia. I am not certain why the defendant ignored the initial examination by Dr. Newman and focused only on the July one, which had almost identical finding. I don't know if that was a function in part of the ALJ. There were a number of errors with the ALJ, including there was a PA, Tracy Rogers, who was hired by Social Security to do a disability exam and went through, because Ms. Nadon has radicular symptoms. She's got numbness and pain down the whole right leg, down into the calf and the ankle. And throughout the ALJ decision, the references were to Schofield, I think, but she does not ever discount PA Tracy Rogers, who did this disability exam. And again, there, defendant argues at footnote 16, six, that that should simply be viewed as a harmless error. I think the medical evidence in the case precludes a finding that there's harmless error, because the records are consistent with all of the healthcare providers, including the nurse practitioner, Michelle Smith, that they all reference almost identical findings throughout the whole treatment. And so in terms of justifying why we ignore Dr. Newman in May and then later discount Dr. Newman's findings by suggesting something that might be new, I don't know, but defendant argues that the ALJ was properly ignoring the doctor when he found that Nadon had normal attention, focus, and recall. She presented to healthcare providers as pleasant, cooperative, alert, and in no apparent distress. That is the whole basis to discount all of the mental healthcare providers, is that she was pleasant, cooperative, alert, had normal attention and focus. There is no one in the medical reviews, including the physicians that Social Security hires to do records reviews, that indicate those findings allow a physician to rule out severe anxiety, severe depression, suicidal ideation. But the ALJ has decided that those were the reasons to discount doctors and the licensed clinical social worker, Danielle Kimbrough, to discount all of them, because she discounted all of them, virtually every one of them. The court's aware, and it's in the briefing, in terms of the legal requirements are lessons in what, when we're dealing with mental issues in terms of objective findings. But here, the doctor found a severe level of anxiety. There was a Beck anxiety inventory of 27 by a Dr. Mahoney, who did a disability exam for Social Security. He found a 27, indicating severe level of anxiety. And so this is not a case where we do not have the types of objective findings for both the mental and the physical findings. The MRIs, they did a later one in 16 that backs up P.A. Rogers in terms of the findings and the radicular evidence. And there's simply no contrary medical evidence, other than we ignore the one physician, we don't even talk about him, and then we say, well, you know, she put on a cheery face to see the doctor, so therefore she must not be having severe anxiety, even though the doctor does not find that. I think what we have is a situation where the ALJ made a decision and said there's no severe conditions, and in order to justify it, simply ignored all of the mental, found none of the mental limitations were severe, therefore didn't present them to the vocational consultant. And as the court is well aware, that you have to include all of the severe impairment into the functional capacity if the vocational consultant's testimony can be relied upon. So here, that
and
should
Dr.
not.
And Dr. Newman said that she would be unable to work at least 3 days a month, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And one of the other physicians, or the licensed clinical social worker, also said there was an inability to sustain focus. And neither of those were submitted or incorporated into the ALJ's opinion relied upon. And in fact, as noted in plaintiff's brief, the ALJ found being off task that amount of time would preclude SGA. So, I mean, a reversal for award is possible. Certainly a remand is warranted. And I think I've hit my time limit. So I appreciate the opportunity to present this argument. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. And we'll let you have 2 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Ellsbury.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is Thomas Ellsbury on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. And if I may turn first to Your Honor, Judge Friedland, your question about the Dr. Newman page. On page 6 of our brief, we addressed that specific record, and we said that Nadon followed up, ostensibly followed up, and we say ostensibly because there are no other records before the ALJ from Dr. Newman.
So on pages 6, 8, 17, 18 of your brief, you say we should discount Dr. Newman because he says he was following up in July, but there was no previous appointment to be following up on. And there clearly is a previous appointment in May. So I don't understand the premise of your brief on this.
I don't have the May appearance.
The May record is date May 23rd, 2016 at the top of ER 579.
Oh, following, okay. I'm sorry, I have to ER 579, correct?
It's at the bottom of the page. There's also a 547 to the right, but that doesn't seem to be the numbering that's being used.
Can counsel go ahead and take your time so you can respond fully? We'll give you an extra couple of minutes if you need.
I see a page from Dr. Newman on 579 with, it seems like nothing but data.
In the top right, if you look at the top right of the page, it says seen by Dr. Newman, MD, date May 23rd, 2016.
Okay, we acknowledge that.
Well, I don't think so, because repeatedly in your brief you say he talks about a follow-up, but it can't be a follow-up because there was no visit before July.
This is a reference to a visit, but there are no, there, I think if we didn't articulate it well, I apologize for that. I think the point we are making there is there was no records from a prior visit. And our primary discussion regarding...
If you look at the next page, there are quite a few records. There are all kinds of notes about what happened in the visit on May 23rd. That's ER 580.
Okay. I would concede that there is an error regarding to whether he first saw her in May 2016 or July 2016. But I look at the notes that he makes here, and they're the same and consistent with what the ALJ had already relied on as far as the July 2016.
But the ALJ doesn't discuss Mr. Newman. Could you point to where the ALJ explains why it is disregarding the treating physician, Dr. Newman? I don't think you'll find it.
I think you're probably correct. Can you direct me where there is a substantive medical record by Dr. Newman that is contrary to the ALJ's assessment of the record?
Dr. Newman says that the client has depression. I think there's a word like major depression and PTSD, and neither of those are really discussed. And Dr. Newman is a treating physician who is not discussed. And I don't understand how that's a thorough analysis of the medical record at that point.
Can you cite to me the record that was before the ALJ where Dr. Newman offered that?
The pages I just showed you, ER 579 and 580 and 581.
I see diagnoses, but I see no discussion of functional limitation. I see a diagnosis of fibromyalgia, but I see no objective evidence to support that. There is nothing underlying Dr. Newman's very few pages here regarding this one day in May. No other doctors within this record have assessed fibromyalgia, PTSD.
Well, I'm not talking about fibromyalgia. I'm talking about major depression and PTSD.
Right, and the ALJ found that that was not, and I would mention, Your Honor, this issue is not really before this court. It was not appealed below. The step two issue has not been briefed in this case. Nobody, Ms. Nadon has not challenged the ALJ's finding at step two that her impairment was limited to the degenerative disc disease.
My understanding. The briefing to us talks about depression and PTSD.
I don't see a legal argument. That's what I'm saying. I've seen depression mentioned. I've seen these things mentioned in the facts and in discussion by appellant but I see no legal argument challenging the ALJ's step two finding nor her assessment
so
of the
severity. So if you look at page 2, ALJ Kelly failed to include PTSD and recurrent major depression, anxiety. Why is that not an argument? I mean, I think it's all over the brief, isn't it?
I would challenge that characterization. She did not fail to address those issues.
Well, where did the ALJ address depression and PTSD?
Page 125, depression and anxiety are mentioned, as well as the other impairments that the ALJ found non-severe. And she continues on from page 125.
But what is the basis for saying that the mental impairments do not cause more than minimal limitation?
She cites all the exhibits, and the basis for finding that are the opinions from Dr. Mahoney, Drs. Bogomil, Dr. Renner, Dr. Yamamoto, Dr. Voorhees, and Mr. Rogers also said she was capable of work. So, and he cites those exhibits, and I don't have the cross-reference from the exhibits to the exhibit from the administrative record exhibits and the excerpts of record here, but I tracked them through on my notes, and in each of those, Dr. Yamamoto, Dr. Voorhees, Mr. Rogers all indicated she returned the ability to work. And I have that at the ALJ discussing that at 129 to 131.
Counsel, may I interject a question?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if in fact the ALJ made several mistakes, which you've acknowledged, wouldn't it be a more fair procedure instead of affirming to vacate and remand so the ALJ can reassess the issues in light of all the evidence?
I would say that there is sufficient evidence here to support the ALJ's reasoning. Any error with the May 2016 report would be harmless because there is nothing of substance regarding the functional limitations. If you were to credit those documents, those pages, as true, it doesn't change the ALJ's decision whatsoever or the substantial evidence supporting her decision.
So the Appeals Council rejected the later Dr. Newman statement that did give more detail and said that she would miss work at least 3 times a week. But as I understand it, the Appeals Council rejected that opinion on the basis that it did not relate to the period at issue, which seems blatantly wrong because it says that it is about the period at issue. So how do you reconcile that?
Because there are several errors or defects with that evidence. First off, there is no evidence of a treatment relation that far back. In fact, as we've been talking here...
Okay, but that's a different issue. I mean, you could come up with a new argument about why they should have rejected it, but all they said was it's the wrong dates, which is wrong because he says it goes back into the period at issue.
Well, I believe I can speak for the commissioner and state that the reasons the evidence is not undermined because the Appeals Council's decision is not subject to review. And since this is evidence that was not before the ALJ, the commissioner is left with no option but for me to defend that basis. And what they found was there was no evidence of a treatment relationship that far back, no evidence supporting the alleged frequent visits, which in fact...
Wait, who said that? Where did the Appeals Council say that there's no evidence of a treatment relationship that far back? I think that's your argument, not anything they ever said, if I'm understanding correctly.
Specifically, Dr. Newman... I do see that here. They do essentially just say it does not relate to the period at issue, and I believe it's our role to explain or to expand upon that on what they're saying based on our representation of our client. And it's a very difficult position, I understand, because the court doesn't have the jurisdiction to review the reasoning of the ALJ's decision, or the appeals counsel's decision, but pursuant to Brews and I believe it's Taylor, once new evidence has been submitted after the decision to the appeals counsel, then this court must review it to determine if it remains supported by substantial evidence, the ALJ's decision. And our argument is these are reasons that the ALJ's decision remains supported by substantial evidence because these are deficiencies in the evidence. There's no progress notes. There's no supporting evidence. The record before the ALJ establishes only back to May 2016, but he provides no basis for saying, oh, yeah, sure, I'll check this box saying it goes back to March 2015. And as Vincent has held, post-decision psychiatric opinions are, quote, inherently unreliable. No, I'm sorry, notoriously unreliable.
So is that different than our opinion in Lester v. Chater, which says you can diagnose something retroactively? I'm confused about how it would necessarily be unreliable.
Well, I'm just citing the case in Vincent, and what I'm saying is it's going to be fact-specific, certainly. So I don't have the facts of what was presented and what evidence the court was looking at in Lester. But I do have the evidence in this case, and in this case it fits more with Vincent because it does not carry any of the characteristics that the ALJ would be looking at in assessing the weight to assign to a medical opinion.
Could I interject a question, please?
Yes, please, certainly.
Okay, my colleague would be too humble, and he is a humble person, to cite a case that I found some question about your argument, and I want to have you have a chance to respond. Judge Gould offered for our court in Diedrich versus Berryhill, something important in this case. In that case, the ALJ found that Diedrich was able to engage in a wide range of daily activity, citing her activities to bathe, cook, shop, and do chores and other tasks. However, Judge Gould highlighted in that, quote, the ALJ ignored other evidence showing the difficulties Diedrich faced in everyday life, close quote. And then citing Gallant versus Heckler, where once more the same issue came up, an ALJ did not justify credibility finding by ignoring competent evidence in the record that suggests the opposite result. Would you please take that law, which governs us in this case, and apply it here? It seems to me that there's a question of what the government did in this issue and being inconsistent with those cases.
Certainly, and I believe this is in regards to the ALJ's assessment of the credibility of the subjective complaints from the claimant. And here, there is no objective evidence that was ignored by the ALJ. And with the ALJ, what Ms. Nadon's allegations were is an inability to stand for more than 5 minutes at a time, to walk more than a few feet, great difficulties walking. Yet all the objective evidence shows full range of motion, normal gait, normal reflexes, no indication of such of a limitation that would demonstrate such extreme limitation. And that's what the ALJ was using in comparing their activities of daily living, the shopping, the seemingly normal activities of daily living, but very inconsistent with the severity of the limitation claimed by the Ms. Nadon. So I think it comports with Diedrich.
You do. Okay.
I understand eight activities of daily living is I would concede there are times when I am reviewing these decisions in our assessment of defensibility and we see activities of daily living and it's like, oh my gosh. But I don't see that. While this is not the strongest one I've ever seen, I think it's strong enough because of the severity of the limitation alleged. 5 minutes standing, yet she goes for walks. She goes shopping. There's objective evidence contrary to that allegation.
And were the activities of daily living inconsistent with the anxiety, depression, and PTSD diagnoses?
Well, Yes. They're inconsistent because, as the ALJ determined, those were, and as several doctors opined, those the limitations resulting from those non-severe impairments were non-existent to mild. And that has never been challenged here either. And so in finding, when she says that she can't go outside, she just sits in the house all day and watches TV, which incidentally is somewhat consistent with her sitting limitation of 20, 30 minutes. But the anxiety and depression, she was saying she couldn't go out at all. Yet she
I don't think that's true. I think she said she would go to the store with another person or try to go and sit in the car and be anxious and have to calm herself down. And if she went into the store, then she thought everyone was watching her. I mean, she did go to the store, but I think the description of how she did that is actually not inconsistent.
But the ALJ relied on the inconsistent objective evidence, the findings that she had no restrictions in activities of daily living from Drs. Bogomil and Renner, who also opined she had no more than mild difficulty in social functioning and or in concentration or persistence.
Okay, so, Counselor Judge Gould, if I may interject, you're 6 minutes over your time, although we've been asking you a lot of questions. It's a challenging case, and I certainly want you to answer fully all the questions from Judge Wallace and Judge Friedman.
Well, let me give one more that's going to bother me in 20 minutes that I haven't asked it. Ultimately, the ALJ's failure to address Dr. Newman's medical opinion generally and specifically with regard to the PTSD diagnosis is the problem that bothers me, and I wonder whether that's legal error that requires us to send it back.
I would submit it is not. Or at the very least not harmful legal error, or harmless, because our requirements for establishing impairments and the severity of them require objective evidence underlying an acceptable medical source like Dr. Newman. We need the objective evidence underlying that, just a blanket diagnosis or a simple diagnosis or statement of an impairment is insufficient to meet the claimant's burden to establish this impairment. And it's insufficient to support, Dr. Newman's opinion, because it's just an assertion. There's no progress notes. There's no underlying objective evidence that supports his diagnoses. And in fact, well, I've changed that page, but often there is the history of diagnoses, and it's listed what's there or has been there, but we have no way to correlate, or the ALJ has no way to correlate it to this time period, this period being reviewed, because we don't know where those came from. Because Dr. Newman provided no evidence underlying that diagnosis, it's a mystery. We have no idea what it is, which is why the regulations require for a doctor's opinion to be given great weight. It's dependent upon the amount of subjective evidence supporting this opinion. And in this case, we have no progress notes. We have, other than the May 2016 record, I believe, we have no other objective supporting evidence.
And July, right?
Pardon me?
May and July.
And I will note that the ALJ found anxiety and depression to be impairments. So it wasn't that the ALJ rejected them outright. She found that all the evidence, and she lists, as I have noted, 4 to 5 doctors who all assess Ms. Nadon with very mild or minimal resulting limitations, which undermines an assertion of such extreme limitation by the claimant. So it goes both to what we were speaking about with Mr. Newman and the diagnosis of, I'm sorry, Dr. Newman, with the diagnosis of PTSD or depression or anxiety, but it also goes to the ALJ's assessment of the claimant's credibility, because she's alleging a lot of limitations based on mental impairment that the objective medical evidence and opinions all state they are mild to non-existent, which is directly contrary to the allegations of inability to go outside.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel.
Yes, I think I have a minute left here, and that should be more time than I need. In terms of the reference about objective medical evidence, when we're dealing with the mental issues, that's seldom available. We do have a disability exam by Dr. Mahoney, who did a Beck anxiety inventory, found a scale of 27. This is a disability exam, not a treating, finding racing heart, trembling hands, shakiness, indigestion. And so in terms of findings, the doctor's findings, Newman's, were consistent both with Mahoney as well as the clinical social worker, who had 23 sessions with this woman. So this is not a function of the doctor just having two visits. There is plenty of evidence in front of the ALJ and the court which confirms her mental limitation. In terms of her own testimony, on daily living that was inconsistent according to defendant's argument and the ALJ, I've included that in my brief at 15 and 16. When she talks about what she does, if she goes to the grocery store, she has to sit in her car and do breathing exercises so she can go inside. If she goes to Walmart, I feel like I'm being judged, I'm nervous. It's better if I have somebody with me. Otherwise, it's really hard for me to do anything by myself. So this is not a function of a woman who has just a modest impact on her activities of daily living. She needs someone to escort her to the grocery store. This should have been included. It should have been analyzed by the ALJ so that we don't have two layers of the court having to deal with these arguments. If it had been analyzed and the ALJ had put the relevant medical and exposed it and compared it, as this court repeatedly said, compare the medical that you think is inconsistent with the testimony so we can all figure out whether you properly reviewed this. If that would have been done, it would have saved a ton of time and a ton of paper. I certainly appreciate the court listening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. I want to again thank both both counsel for the appellant and appellee for their excellent arguments. And the Nadon case number 19-35712. Shall now be submitted, and the parties will hear from us in due course. Thank you.
Thank you.